This is KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Welcome to Civil Rights and Wrongs, the state of your civil liberties in the Lone Star State. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of the co-op board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters. The following is an encore presentation that first aired on October 27th, 2020. Last week, Matthew Desmond, professor of sociology at Princeton, wrote an extensive article for the New York Times Magazine titled, "The Tenants Who Evicted Their Landlord." The article follows the story of residents of five buildings in the Corcoran neighborhood of Minneapolis who had been in a prolonged battle with their landlord. The tenants had mobilized for better conditions, resisted evictions, and participated in a rent strike. They were even able to get the city council to revoke the landlord's rental license, but he still owned the buildings. The article chronicles a struggle that presented enormous hurdles, but concludes happily as the tenants take ownership. Desmond points out that a new kind of housing movement can be seen across America. Renters have begun to organize against evictions, profit-centered development, and landlord disinvestment. In March, when COVID-19 hit the United States, the country was already experiencing a serious housing crisis. Nevertheless, tenant organizers doubled their efforts. Nationwide, more than 1 in 6 unemployed tenants has fallen behind in rent payments, and 45% of all renters think that they probably will be evicted from their homes in the coming months. Desmond concludes, "As the pandemic spreads throughout the country, further exposing our vulnerabilities and inequalities, many of us are grasping for something new. In the collective pain of this moment, when our days are filled with death and fear, a new America is being conceived of and demanded. But moments are made by movements. If we want to change the world, it could be instructive to pay attention to a group of people who have radically changed their own." Good evening and welcome to Civil Rights and Wrongs on Co-op 91.7 in Austin, streaming through koop.org. I'm your host, Bob Daly. Our guests this evening include Molly Jensen, Executive Director of the Austin Tenants Council. ATC's philosophy is that everyone has a right to safe, decent, and fair housing. We also have Shoshana Krieger, Project Director for Building and Strengthening Tenant Action. BASTA is dedicated to helping Austin renters work with their neighbors to improve conditions in their homes and communities. And we have our regular commentator, Jim Harrington, retired founder of the Texas Civil Rights Project. Michelle is working for the Travis County Clerk for one more week, helping to ensure that your vote counts. Welcome all. So Molly, you're brand new at this, I guess, huh?
Yeah, what a time to start. Yeah, I've been at ATC for a month, and it has been a month of nonstop activity.
Yeah. You guys are making all sorts of adjustments there. I mean, the whole world is adjusting to being virtual, but you guys have a lot to deal with normally, like in terms of documents and whatnot. I imagine there's been a lot of one-on-one in the past. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we have a really active in-house counseling operation normally. And that since March has not been an option. And so we were scrambling for the first month of that, from March to April, but we quickly kind of got up to speed and updated our phone system, expanded that, expanded our online counseling, and also started doing online documentation with folks. So we do a lot of mailing and a lot of phone and a lot of online things right now.
I imagine. And Shoshana, you guys are all about organizing and getting out there in the field. I've seen some articles in the press about that. So it looks like you're still active, but how has that changed for you guys?
So yeah, we're still active organizing in a pandemic, and organizing when you can't be in the field is very, very challenging. Our team, though, has managed to make it work. We're doing a lot of digital divide work and trying to get technology into the hands of our members and the tenants we work with, working with folks on training them on how to get online, how to get access to low-income discounts for internet services so they can actually be on a Zoom meeting, figuring out how to do simultaneous interpretation on video conferences, all sorts of fun and challenging virtual means of organizing with a community or population where there are real barriers to any form of digital organizing and digital inclusion in this moment and into the future is just so important that we put resources into. We have been in the field in a very limited way flyering, but we're not doing any in-person meetings. We're not doing any canvassing, but we have tenants associations. One new tenants association, which just formed during the pandemic, just collected 143, I think it is, signatures on their issue. So tenants are still organizing and mobilizing and doing it in a safe and socially distanced way.
That's really inspiring. Geez, keep up the good work there. Glad that you still got the energy and keeping up the momentum for it all. Molly, tell us a little about the services that ATC provides for the community.
Yeah, happy to. And I was just thinking, Shoshana does not lack for energy. So we're all really thankful for that. So we have a number of services. We do mediation services. So we work with folks who are in emergency situations and are facing illegal evictions. So we work with those folks to halt the eviction. We also have repair mediations, which quite frankly are on hold for the most part right now. We're not able to go out to the locations to gather information about repairs that need to happen, repairs that are threats to health and safety, but that's part of our wheelhouse in non-COVID times. We also have housing counseling. We work with folks to kind of guide them, advise them on tenant-landlord responsibilities that are part of the Texas Property Code. We've been doing a lot of education through our counseling, our counselors on what the CDC order means for folks, how to kind of navigate that process of submitting the declarations. We also counsel folks who are having other issues with landlords and help them to understand their leases and to advocate for themselves and understand that they do have protections under the law, under the Texas Property Code. We also have Fair Housing Arm and help folks who have experienced discrimination and work with them to investigate and to advise and to, in some instances, help coordinate legal services for those folks.
So it sounds like direct services, legal services, and mediation type services. But Shoshana, maybe you could contrast that a little with the way that BASTA conducts its business.
Sure. We do some things which are very similar and oftentimes in collaboration with the great work that Austin Tenants Council does in terms of client and community education, especially during this pandemic. We've been doing a lot of educational presentations, Facebook Lives, Univision events, explaining the myriad of tenant protections that exist in Austin. There are some mayoral protections, there's a county judge protections, there's a city council ordinance, and there are the federal protections, including the CDC order, and it all can be very confusing. So we've been doing a lot of education around that, both with accessible visual materials, and then also things like we have a video you can see on our Facebook, which is a game show explainer of the CDC moratorium. So we're trying to make some of it at least a little bit fun. In addition to that, we are part of Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. And so the attorneys, I just want to give a shout out to the amazing housing team there who've been defending tenants against evictions and providing legal advice to tenants on their situations. And yesterday, TRALA, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, along with other legal aids in the state, just launched a website, www.stoptexasaviction.org, and that's STOPTXeviction.org. And there's a guided form to give advice to tenants. So if a tenant listening to this right now has questions about where they stand, what their landlords can do, that's a website they can go to and get some immediate tailored information. Another thing that BOSTA has been doing in collaboration with other organizations like Austin Tenants Council and Democratic Socialists of America, along with Austin Justice Coalition, Texas Housers, Planning Our Communities, Austin Women in Housing, is we have the Eviction Solidarity Network. So we've been working to turn out volunteers to track and watch eviction hearings and also to provide support to tenants facing evictions and also a rapid response team to respond to a particularly egregious behavior by landlords in the eviction process. Because the courts have mostly been paused in Travis County, a lot of those activities were somewhat paused, but they're ramping back up again. And then the final thing which we're doing, which is more of the bread and butter and what we've always been doing and we will continue to do, is organizing in tenants associations. So keeping the tenants associations we were working with before alive and supporting new ones as they grow and develop. So at one property we worked at, the landlord was giving notices to vacate, which violated the mayor's order, and the tenant association organized and got the landlord to rescind those notices. At another one, she was towing, and they were able to get the landlord to stop illegal towing practices. Another association has been organizing. It's a senior property for better cleaning and sanitation services. And then another association has been organizing around landlord entry, right? Because those issues are now particularly problematic when we overlay it with the pandemic. And so the work that we're doing is seeing one problem, which is affecting a lot of people, and then working with those folks to try to address it collectively.
First of all, just some quick high-level stats. You know, the rental community in Austin is massive. And if I recall from our show a year ago, I believe it's over 50%. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have a very large rental percentage of renters in our community. And I mean, the other thing that we've seen over the last decade is the percentage of those rentals that are affordable has decreased dramatically. So not only do we have an abundance majority renter population, but we also have a situation of really limited stock of affordable rentals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so about 55% of Austinite households are renters, and that includes 70% of Black Austinite households are renters, and 65% of Latinx Austinite households are renters, and 50% of Austin renters are housing cost burden. So that means they're paying more than 30% of their income towards rent. So that's getting at the point Molly just raised, right, of the lack of affordable units in our housing stock.
Yeah, precisely. And so we've got a huge rental population here. We've got an incredible economic crisis going on. And, you know, ever since day one, in the back of my mind, I keep thinking about, is there a Niagara Falls of evictions waiting for us here? And my sense is that the city has tried to make some at least some modest efforts to hold that in check. Before we get into that, could either one of you just sort of take us through the eviction process? What has to happen before the sheriff shows up and starts throwing your stuff out on the lawn?
I'm going to let Shoshana document that because she's been in the thick of stepping into that process.
Okay.
Sure. So there's a typical eviction process, and then there's an eviction process during the time of COVID. Which would you like me to?
let's start with, you know, before COVID, what was this like and what's happened as a result of COVID?
Totally. And that's the way we do our presentations is we do the typical one first and then we do all of the weird ways it changes. Yeah. So in the typical process, the first step is a landlord will give a tenant what's called a notice to vacate. And that's a piece of paper which says you have to leave in X number of days. And Texas state law says that the default is 3 days, but a lease can shorten the notice to vacate period to 1 day. So a lot of tenants in Austin who have the most standardized lease will normally get a notice to vacate saying you have to leave within 1 day. And if you don't leave within 1 day, then we can go to court and start the process for eviction. The notice to vacate has to be served in a particular manner. It's the landlord themselves can be the one to serve it. It's oftentimes on the inside of a door. It can be sent via mail, but then some additional time has to be added. But there are very kind of specific ways a landlord's supposed to give that notice to vacate. If the tenant doesn't leave, then the next step is that the landlord can go to court and can file the eviction papers. And after the papers are filed, a constable will come out and serve the papers to the tenant. And when I say the landlord is going to go to court to file, it's oftentimes going to your computer, right? Like you're not actually physically going to the courthouse anymore in 2020, and then especially in a pandemic. So a constable will then serve the papers on the tenant. So that's going to be someone in uniform. So if you're a tenant and you got the papers directly from your landlord, then that's not going to be a summons directly from the court. It's only a constable going to be the one to give you those. And in those papers, the normal process is the papers will tell you to appear in court. And it's normally about a week or two from when you get the papers. And then you show up to court and that's your hearing. And if you're behind on rent, in Texas, you have almost no defenses to an eviction, so you likely are going to lose. So that means in Texas, your roof could be falling in and water could be flooding and making your bedroom into a pool. And if you haven't paid your rent, you can be evicted. And so that's just an important point because oftentimes tenants understandably think, wow, my landlord's breaking his end of the bargain. Why do I have to pay? But unfortunately, right now, Texas landlord-tenant law doesn't allow for that. Of course, a tenant can decide to take that risk and can say, yeah, I'm going to like roll the dice and I'm okay if I'm going to be evicted because I shouldn't be like paying my landlord that. But that's a risk you'd be taking as a tenant. The final step then is if the judge finds against you and enters a judgment for the landlord, then you have 5 days to appeal the judgment. And so if a tenant decides to appeal the judgment, then everything gets paused. And then there's a whole other process in county court. Oftentimes a tenant has to pay money into a court registry in order to be able to do the appeal. There are some ways low-income tenants don't have to pay as much. That's getting a little bit too in the weeds. And then the other option, and this is kind of what most the path most tenants take, would be the other option would be the tenant could just move and then that's that. And then if the tenant doesn't move, a constable can come and show up. And that's what you're saying of the sheriff showing up and actually forcibly removing you. And it's important to remember that only the constable can be the one to forcibly remove you. Your landlord themselves cannot.
I was just going to say, you know, so what we do at ATC is try, I mean, just hearing that, I know for all of us, just the, you know, the image of the constable showing up and forcibly removing you and your family from your home is, you know, it inspires, you know, sadness, you know, even just hearing about that. And so one of the things that is really important to at ATC is that we do everything that we can to prevent things getting to that point. And one of the mediation services that we have is emergency mediation, in which all our counselors respond within 24 hours, basically to intercede in any potential move towards eviction. So our whole operation is designed to, at every step of the way, create processes, negotiation, mediation, in order to prevent that horrible experience of eviction that Shoshana just described. And, you know, one of the things when you talk about kind of this is in some ways an avalanche, I mean, I think in many ways in Austin, it's an avalanche plus a tsunami plus, you know, a tornado, because in our community, you know, there we've had a situation for a long time where there's been increasing rents, increasing rates of displacement of communities who have been longtime renters and residents of certain parts of our community. And then we had the mortgage crisis, which disproportionately impacted communities of color and households with low income who were, you know, those who were more likely to have the subprime mortgages. After that, when they're cast out of the homeowner population, and a lot of that housing stock was bought up by, you know, wealthy owners, then we had an increasingly vulnerable population of renters in our community. So then you add on top of that the COVID-19 economic downturn and how folks who are already economically marginalized were just, you know, impacted by that so dramatically. And then we had the expiration of the additional $600 in unemployment benefits. And so with the expiration of that, folks who were just beginning to maybe see some hope in being able to make their rent are now in a situation where eviction is this sort of looming fear that is coloring, you know, all aspects of their lives.
Right. Jim, were you trying to get something in there?
No, I'm really listening because a lot of the people I work with are in this situation, you know, and I've already been referring some people over to the Tenants Council. Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, the description right now of the economic impact COVID has had is just heart-wrenching. People were beginning to kind of get their feet on the ground, and then this comes along and, you know, and they're exposed both ways, physically with the people with whom they're working, and exposed to the exploitation of them as essential workers. And I think I used an example before in another program. You know, I have a family I'm working with, the husband's in construction, and every time somebody on that team tests positive, they lay off the whole crew for 2 weeks, and they don't pay them, of course. You know, I mean, this is an example of the, I think, the exploitation that's going on and just how rugged the economic situation is for people that are on the ground right now.
So since mid-March, I've heard any number of moratoriums on evictions. I've lost track of how many there are, and are we currently under one? So if either of you could speak to that.
Sure, I could jump in, and Molly, feel free to jump in. There are current tenant protections in place. There aren't any blanket moratoriums. The media, there's been a lot of talk of the CDC moratorium on evictions. And the CDC order does not give a moratorium on evictions. It states that certain tenants who might be eligible, if they give their landlord a declaration, which is signed under penalty of perjury, then they can have their case basically paused until the beginning of next year. And it's a good protection. Folks can find out more information about that protection on a number of websites. One website you can go to, which the Eviction Solidarity Network has, is evictionisnotacure.org. And that has a lot of details about that moratorium. So that's one kind of quasi-moratorium. Also for the CDC declaration, a tenant has state that they're attempting to make partial payments. And there are a few other things they have to be doing. For most tenants in Travis County, and in Austin, though, there are local protections which are more robust and more beneficial than that CDC moratorium. So local courts have, Travis County courts, have paused eviction hearings for non-payment of rent if monthly rent is $2,475 or less. So this only applies to non-payment of rent evictions, and it's only if the rent amount is under $2,475. But that effectively is going to prevent many of the evictions. There's an added layer of protections with Mayor Steve Adler's order and the county judge order, which prohibit the issuance of notices to vacate in certain situations. So that was the very first step of the eviction process, is the landlord giving this notice to vacate. And there was a blanket prohibition on notices to vacate through September 30th. And so that means a number of the cases which are currently pending in court might be thrown out because there were faulty notices to vacate given in those cases. And so there was a blanket prohibition back then. The current orders state that notices to vacate cannot be given if monthly rent is $2,475 or less, and it's a non-payment case, but also if it's a holdover case. So those are cases where a tenant has stayed longer than their lease allows. And we're starting to see that more and more because now we're 6 months into the pandemic. And so that means that a landlord shouldn't be able to start the eviction process if a tenant has overstayed their lease and hasn't been able to pay their rent. And I know I just said a lot and it's a mouthful and it's confusing. And so I think this is why it's really important to both look at the resources which exist online. Evictionisnotacure.org is a great place to start, to reach out to a legal aid for individual assistance, reach out to tenants council for individual assistance to walk folks through exactly what protections apply. But because of the local protections, we haven't yet seen a tsunami. We're starting to see a little bit more of a trickle. There were a couple of dozen cases which were heard this week, and we expect to see more, but it's probably not going to be until January that we're seeing a lot. In other parts of Texas, they're seeing a ton. Houston, Harris County courts, really, it seems like have been flooded. Texas Housers is doing some great work there around evictions and has their own eviction solidarity network. El Paso also has had many cases, same with Bexar County. So I think that we're actually incredibly lucky in Travis County in terms of the protections folks have. And for this moment in time, tenants in Travis County and Austin are more stable than a lot of tenants in Texas. But more stable, I mean, what are we comparing it to, right? Like it's still very, very, very unstable. And at a certain point, we're not going to be able to kick the can down the road anymore, and the chickens will come home to roost.
We're speaking with Molly Jensen from Austin Tenants Council and Shoshona Krieger from BASTA. We need to take a short station break, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Civil Rights and Wrongs on Co-op 91.7 in Austin, streaming through koop.org. I'm your host, Bob Daly. Once again, this is an encore presentation that first aired on October 27th, 2020. We're speaking with Molly Jensen, Executive Director of the Austin Tenants Council, ATC, and Shoshona Krieger, Project Director for Building and Strengthening Tenant Action, or BASTA. Let's continue.
Shoshana's exactly right. I mean, it's not a blanket moratorium. Fortunately for folks in Austin, we do have some temporary, you know, I would say relatively good protections when you compare us to other parts of the state. The CDC order, we walk folks through signing that declaration. A lot of times the notices to vacate, the eviction process begins because these orders are confusing, not only to renters, but to landlords. And so part of what we're doing is educating landlords about what these prohibitions mean to them. And then on the renter side, the Austin Tenants Council counselors also help folks understand the process for submitting those declarations. the CDC declaration that you have to submit in order to halt the eviction, you have to agree that you are seeking assistance, financial assistance, that if you were to lose your home, you would likely be without a home and thus not be able to protect you and your family or the community from the greater spread of COVID. And that's one of the reasons the CDC issued the order, is to try to promote public health by allowing people to be safe in their homes. And you also have to agree that you understand that the landlord, once the eviction process is no longer halted, could charge you the full amount of all of the fees, all of the back rent. And so it's sort of bittersweet in the sense that you are giving yourself a little more time to remain safe in your home, but you're also in a situation where when the CDC order is lifted, then the amount of money that is going to be owed could be very significant.
Now, the city had a couple of programs to assist renters, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think it was a whole lot of money, but were either of you in contact with anyone who was able to benefit by that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off, and I know Shoshana has also been, you know, tracking this issue. So the city and the county have offered funds, financial assistance for renters. And the bulk amount, as I recall from the city right now, is it was a little over $12 million. One of the issues has been just a process for disbursement of that, how renters can get access to that. Right now, it's a random sort of lottery draw for renters. So you can go on the city's website, austintex.gov, and I think it's RENT. So it's Relief Emergency. Can't remember the full thing, but the acronym is RENT, and you can apply for financial assistance to meet your rent obligations, but then you're entered into a lottery. So what we've experienced is a lot of the folks who have contacted us have some, you know, concerns about whether they will be able to secure the funds. If they are randomly chosen to receive the funds, there's also concern that those funds will not be sufficient in order to meet their obligations for back rent.
On our end, we've helped a number of our members applying for both city and assistance, the rent program and Travis County rental assistance program. The application process takes some time. It normally takes our staff a half hour or hour to help each person. A lot of this is digital divide issues. To date, I don't think we've had any of our members successfully receive funding. I would also contrast that with the RISE funding and the RISE lottery. We had members apply to that. That was pretty simple process. And we do know folks who are able to receive that really quickly. And I think that this is a challenge which a lot of governments right now are struggling with across this country. There's money which is available, but how do we disperse that money quickly into the hands of people who are directly impacted and are most in need of it?
Yeah. Either one of you, what do you see in terms of near-term jeopardies? I mean, are programs about to expire? Are there issues you see coming up in the next few weeks that cause you to lose sleep at night?
I've been losing sleep every night, frankly. So we have the mayor's order and the county judge's order and the CDC order all extend until the end of the calendar year. So the protections, the processes that we have right now in terms of kind of temporarily halting most evictions will be in place for the next couple of months. The issues that keep me up are these mounting debts for folks who, you know, let's say a person loses her job and then is not able to pay the full amount of rent. And with each month, the debt burden becomes higher. And so there is a program that's through the Austin Public Health. It's a housing stabilization and debt negotiation program. And there are a number of agencies, Caritas, Safe Alliance, who refer clients to us and to some other folks to try to negotiate the amount of their debt down. So that, I think, I just thinking the things that I've been trying to wrap my head around is how to get news about that program out to more folks and get more referrals so that we can begin negotiating the debt that folks are going to be facing down. The second thing that keeps me up is just thinking about when the orders expire, how can I ramp up our housing counselors so that they can be available to meet the demand that we've seen steadily increasing for guidance and advice. And I would imagine would probably, you know, triple in January when the orders expire. So how can we ramp up and be in communities that are going to be hardest hit? And how can we be most accessible to folks who need that support? And then the third thing that keeps me up is how can we increase access to the financial assistance that we already know is not going to be sufficient to meet the needs of renters, and how can we see that folks who are in desperate need of that financial assistance can get connected to those resources? Hmm.
Shoshana, anything to add to that?
Well, that was a long laundry list of very good things to keep one up at night. I share in a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think what keeps me up at night is the stories I hear from our members who are just really, really struggling and really in fear of what will happen next. And part of it is this pandemic. Part of this is members losing relatives to COVID-19, of not being able to socially isolate in households where there is a sick member, but they're living in overcrowded conditions. So they have nowhere else to go, or they're being told they have to stay in place and shelter in place, and they're sheltering in place with mold and their kids have asthma. They're homeschooling their kids, or they're doing a remote learning with their kids, and the landlord's cutting off the electricity in the middle of the day to do some unknown project with no notice at all, and giving the tenant a lease violation if they don't give access. And so I think a lot of the things which are keeping me up at night are actually a lot of the normal landlord-tenant issues and a lot of the normal landlord-tenant injustices, which occur on a daily basis and occurred before COVID, and now COVID is magnifying them and making them worse and making folks feel even less secure in their housing and in their homes. And then I guess the final thing keeping me up is the way that BOSTA approaches how do we work for housing justice in the city is collectively. It's about bringing people together. It's about having community. It's about the power of community to heal, the power of relationships, the power of neighbors, the power of not feeling alone. And how do we do that when we can't be physically present with each other? And we are struggling to do that. I think we are continuing to do that, but it's not the same is being together. That is the thing that keeps me up, is how do we replicate that in a virtual environment and in a safe environment? Because it's important that we are socially distanced in this moment. But I think without collective power, we are not going to ever be able to right the many wrongs that exist in the landlord-tenant relationship in Texas.
Wow, there's so much going on here. And yet I think about the big picture with the economy, and you know, there's a couple new possibilities here. What if the owner declares bankruptcy, for example, or if the owner decides to sell the building? Where does that leave the tenants?
Well, so on that, before answering your question, I do want to elevate an amazing victory which occurred with one of the associations with BOSTA works with early on in the pandemic. It's a mobile home community of 68 families, and they were able to successfully purchase their community. It happened in May, and it was with virtual organizing, and they're doing it now, and they're amazing and an inspiration. And I think it's finding inspiration in the models like that, that if you do have a property which is going under, of getting tenants to organize, getting tenants to be able to identify folks who will finance cooperative, decommodified housing structures so we can get housing out of the private market, out of the hands of investors who only care about making their pockets larger and don't care about the health of communities. And so I think there is real opportunity there, or there's potentially real opportunity in the coming months and coming years to be able to enact more policies which are promoting decommodified housing and to have more communities who we can find inspiration from.
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing to focus on. In the article in the New York Times Magazine, there were just so many kind of powerful statements. Power comes from people, and that moments are made by movements. And I just think, Austin, what distinguishes us right now in this crisis about evictions is that we are, you know, we're one of number two, I guess, in terms of the number of affordable units. We're in some ways positioned to be really severely impacted by this eviction crisis in a way that other communities will not encounter. But we also have really creative, innovative, community-minded folks who are willing to think about creative ways of financing and of investing. And so I think we are sort of positioned right now, this urgency can really kind of galvanize not only renters, but also public officials and investors to think about how can we build a community that really serves the people of the community, and how can we build a community that nurtures health and well-being by offering housing that everyone deserves.
How about advice to renters? Here's your chance. You're in the pulpit now. Shoshana or Molly, either one of you, what would you like to say to renters?
I would say talk to your neighbors if you're experiencing something which isn't right. Probably other people are experiencing the same thing and you aren't alone. And reach out to BASTA if you want to organize with your neighbors. And if you don't want to organize with your neighbors and something wrong is happening, reach out to the agencies which provide direct assistance. Reach out to Austin Tenants Council, reach out to Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid for legal assistance. There's a community which is providing assistance to tenants in this moment, and you're not alone. What you're experiencing, thousands, if not tens of thousands of other tenants are experiencing, and the world doesn't need to be this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say educate and advocate for yourself, know your rights, be strong in your convictions about claiming and exercising those rights. And I would also, I mean, this corresponds to a lot of what Shoshana is advocating and is embodying. But embrace your power, because there really is power in a collective movement to protect our rights. And I think that sometimes folks, either because of fear or shame related to a pending eviction, are afraid to use their voice and exercise their power. But when folks do that, then that's what makes the change. That is what is going to offer hope, not only to their household, but to the community at large.
Once again, resources, websites, phone numbers for each of you.
So Austin Tenants Council, you can find us online, housing-rights.org. We also have several hotlines, the counseling line. The best number for the counseling line is 512-474-1961. And we have some skilled housing advocates who can listen and advise and guide and support renters wherever they find themselves in this current situation.
And for you, Shoshana?
So for BASTA, you can find us online at bastaaustin.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and social media. We're at BASTA Austin, and that's probably where like our most up-to-date information is. If you're interested in organizing with your neighbors, you can give us a call, 512-522-9984, leave a message. And then for just educational resources, our website, and that links to a lot of them. You also can go to evictionisnotacure.com, which has local Austin resources. And then for a guided kind of intake process, which will give you tailored information, you can go to www.stoptxeviction.org.
Fantastic. And Jim, did you have anything else to add?
And I really compliment both of the organizers here, which I think is really key, is organizing, and compliment you on your work. The best line I'm walking away with tonight is moments make movements. And that's so true.
Yeah. It's been a real honor to have both of you here today. As I say, I've been thinking about evictions a lot, and I'm not even a renter. So I suspect this is on the minds of a lot of people right now. You know, I think it's at least a small comfort knowing that there are resources available to people who are facing some very traumatic and dire circumstances. Thank you both for joining us and for all the great work you're doing.
Yeah, and thank you, Bob. I feel like to the extent that we're having open conversations about this and discussing resources, it takes away some of the shame that might, you know, hold folks back from really advocating for themselves. And so I appreciate you focusing on this in the show. Have a good night, everyone.
Okay.
You too. Keep up the good work, everybody.
Well, it's Friday afternoon, May 7th, 2021. And our friend Austin Sanders is back with us again. Austin is a staff writer at the Austin Chronicle, and he's been on paternity leave for several weeks. How you doing, Austin?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back, Bob. Yeah, I was gone for about 5 weeks on leave. My wife and I had a baby girl on April 1st, and I'm really grateful to have been able to stay home and help out and spend that time with her. But it's also good to be back and observing things at City Hall again.
Great. Well, you hit the ground running here. It sounds like the police academy is going to reopen. What's the latest on that?
Council took a kind of split vote yesterday. 9 council members voted for it. Greg Kassar voted against it, and Mayor Pro Tem Natasha Harper Madison abstained from the vote to basically authorize City Manager Spencer Kronk to induct the next cadet class no later than June 7th, right? So this is definitely earlier than many of the criminal justice advocates who have been pressuring the city to close down the academy. This is earlier than they have wanted to resume classes. They feel that's not going to be enough time to make some of the changes that the city council has committed to reforming the culture at the academy. And just to kind of remind listeners, there's been, you know, numerous reports kind of detailing the toxic, really dangerous culture at the academy. It's been described as a paramilitary teaching style, which is, you know, to kind of yell at cadets a lot and punish them physically and kind of ingrain this mentality that police officers are warriors going into combat every day instead of guardians meant to kind of protect and serve the citizenry. So there's the sense that that attitude contributes to some of the worst aspects and outcomes of policing, and changing that culture would produce better trained police officers who can carry out policing in a different way. But council has given the green light to resuming those classes on June 7th, which, again, is concerning for many advocates and some council members.
For the last several weeks, we've spent a lot of time on Prop B and the other issues that were on the ballot a week ago. But right in the midst of that, this report came out from the Task Force on Reimagining Public Safety. Is their report consistent with opening the police academy again this soon?
No. In fact, the task force that you mentioned, the first vote that they took was to not reopen the academy. Basically, they said that there's a lot of moving parts. There's still more work that needs to be done. In fact, changing the curriculum, bringing in new courses and new materials has been a big part of the work to reform the academy. And that work is still underway. City staff doesn't expect it to be done until May 31st. That's just a week before the next class will resume. The task force, you know, basically said it's too soon to resume these cadet classes. But the city council and the mayor, of course, have been under an immense amount of pressure to resume these classes, to kind of open up the pipeline to produce more police officers. And I think it's reflective and how some of the council members have talked about, even the council members who voted to resume the cadet classes, how they have talked about the 144th cadet class as a pilot. And, you know, to emphasize that if the academy is not reformed or changed the way that council sees fit, they can close it again. And this will just be the one class, and then it can close down again for more changes to occur. In fact, council member Allison Alter, who, you know, voted to reopen the cadet class on Thursday, described the vote as a kind of a leap of faith. There is no way of knowing if the changes are completed to satisfaction, implemented yet, except through actually starting up the cadet classes again, testing it out to see if the changes that have been made are sufficient or if more work is needed. So yeah, you know, there's definitely a sense that it's happening too soon. Even among some people who have supported the reopening, there's some trepidation around it, but they're moving ahead.
In the meantime, talking about Prop B, it sounds like the city's scrambling a little bit here. On the one hand, I believe that Council Member Tovo has put forward a resolution and that we've got the city manager scrambling too. Can you tell us what's happening there?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Council Member Kathy Tovo crafted a resolution to kind of direct staff to further explore what are called designated campsites. An example is the one in Southeast Austin, you know, that's now known as Camp Esperanza. It's on the state-owned land. The other one's Foundation, which is a really well-respected social service agency working with people experiencing homelessness. They operate that site now, and it's a designated camping site. If you don't want to stay in a shelter, if you have nowhere else to go, you can go to this site and pitch a tent or camp out there. Of course, they're at capacity right now, but council hopes, after approving this resolution unanimously from Kathy Tovo, hopes to establish more of these campsites throughout the city to basically have people who have been camping under overpasses and public parks and other places to have a place to go now that Prop B passed and the old public camping restrictions will go into effect on May 11th, which brings in the city manager who addressed enforcement and the plan to deal with camps that are still very much present throughout the city. And so on May 11th, the new rules go into effect, but he kind of made clear that that doesn't mean that on May 11th, all of the camps are going to disappear. Everyone who is camping out in public will be moved elsewhere. The city staff wants to, as he put it, you know, approach this humanely to make sure that people are relocated safely and offered assistance, housing or case management to kind of get them onto a path for more stable housing before they are swept aside, which is certainly a fear among advocates and people living on the street. Now that the new restrictions are in place again, that there will be motivation to sweep people away, as had been the practice before June of 2019 when council first amended the public camping rules. That's encouraging news, I would say, that the city management is at least aware of the sensitivity around enforcing the new public camping rules and that they are saying publicly, at least, that they plan to approach it sensitively and humanely. Clearly will remain to be seen what enforcement actually looks like on the ground. I'll be watching that very closely. But for now, they're saying that the plan is still in progress. Of course, the police department will be involved and they're kind of working on their end as well. But we should know more, hopefully, in the coming days.
You know, some would ask, why didn't the city do this from the start? And, you know, it's my understanding that the city from June 2019 was all about permanent supportive housing and kind of dismissed the idea, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Dismiss the idea of sanctioned encampments, designated campsites. In fact, they directed staff to explore creating such campsites not long, you know, in the summer of 2019 after amending the ordinances. And staff basically said they're not a good idea. They consulted national experts. They reviewed national research that found they're costly. And the big problem is, though they, you know, are described as temporary campsites, you know, we don't want these to be permanent solutions. We know they're not permanent solutions. There's going to be a temporary place while we get the housing system beefed up. National experts and research shows that once they're open, they're very hard to shut down. You know, you kind of have cycling in and out of them, and it's hard to get to that point where you have enough housing available to completely move people out of the designated campsites into the housing solutions. And they do soak up resources, money for hygiene, you know, to keep them sanitary and healthy and secure. That's money that could be going toward housing solutions, which of course are the really only permanent solution to homelessness, is to house people and provide the services that they need to remain housed. So this is a big concern among advocates that the designated campsites will just grow in size and number and continue to soak up resources that should be going to housing. Council, at least Tovo and Allison Alter and Kitchen, these other council members who support these designated campsites, they at least say that they're aware of this and don't want that to happen. Of course, I think a lot of times that can be out of their control once the policy is actually in place, but we'll see how that happens. And basically, the resolution that Tovo crafted directs staff to study best practices for setting these up, these designated campsites, study locations throughout the city in the next few weeks, kind of deliver that information back to council so they can start voting on where these sites should be located and when they should open up, how many people should be allowed to stay at them, things of that nature.
Well, in the meantime, you're probably still catching up with a lot of the APD stuff that you were covering in your absence. The video recording of the Gonzalez shooting came
right out,
and I know we're out of time here today, but I hope we can have a follow-up on that sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would like to do that.
Thanks so much for joining us here today. And again, welcome back.
Thanks again. I appreciate it, Bob.
Well, that's all for this evening. Take care, everyone, and stay safe.